Tonight, I'd like to follow a couple of threads in our koan with you and see how they might form part of the texture of this weave that we're making together. We who are the heart, the source, the dark enigma of something new. Something not yet completely seen. Here we are under these big old pines by this quiet stream, along with the tall grasses and the sweet flowers and calling birds of a fortunate spring, held and fed in the midst of the big, dark enigma that is our world. Right now, what are we the source of? The beating, wondering heart of? So the first theme or thread I'd like to trace with you is about how we hold each other. And I'd like to walk through our story from this perspective. It's almost unsaid in the story, but at the same time, very present. So for this, I'm going to be working from Trevor Leggett's account, because there's a little bit in there that isn't in our text. And so what the first bit of it is just about this woman, young woman. Chiona was her lay name, her birth name. And the note says that she was a woman of Akita, married, one daughter. Huh. And at 34, her husband dies. And the note says she could not get over her grief. And we've talked about that odd phenomenon that, you know, people think we're supposed to get over our grief, or we think we're supposed to, or we think they're supposed to. I have a friend whose son killed himself last year. And the 21st, this next week, is the anniversary of his death. My friend spends part of every day with a pillow over his head weeping. She became a nun. So I guess we'll assume that she had family and helped somebody took on her daughter and was maybe more able to accompany her daughter than she would have been. But we don't know anything about that. But that's what she did, because that's what she had to do. And so she came to Buko, teacher of the nation, and asked her a question. What is Zen? And he answered, didn't he? The heart of the one who asks is Zen. It's not to be got from the words of someone else. And so a part that's left out of our other version that I'm interested in here is the next thing. The nun said, "Well then, sir, what are you doing?" Reading the sermons that are recorded. It's like a fair question. Now, you may have heard me mention that he was Chinese and his Japanese wasn't too good yet. So what would happen is that he would give his talks in Song Dynasty Chinese. They were recorded and then afterwards translated so they could be distributed. It must have been an interesting way to listen to his talks. And so this is what he said. He answered that. He said, "To a deaf person, you show the moon by pointing." So here's our moon already, you know, right at the beginning of the story. "To a deaf person, you show the moon by pointing. To a blind man, you show the gate by knocking on it with a tile." So who are we? Thank you. I needed that. So then there's this kind of, right? Now what then? And at that moment, that's when one of the deer near the Hakugando stream gave a cry. Now, has anybody heard a deer give a cry?
Yeah. No.
Who said yes?
Yes.
All right, tell me about it.
It's like a pain, agony, screaming.
It's
fear.
A scream. It's a horrible scream that you can really hardly bear.
Yeah.
It's like not some cute little sound. It is just the agony. Horrible scream. You just want to run. You've got to stop it, right? And the teacher said, "Where is that deer?" He has not left her, has he? He is right in there with her in her grief. What about that? Where's that? But he's also not just saying, "Oh, you poor thing, I'm so sorry you lost your husband." Is he? He's not with her on that level. He's with her on a different level, isn't he, at that moment. So she listened. That must have been hard enough. And then he gives a shout. And, you know, I sort of held back on my shout the other night because it's not very pleasant, a really, really loud shout. It's startling and it can feel like you're being attacked by it, right? And on the other hand, it's raw. And where was she? Raw. And so he brings it right in there, doesn't he? He gives her his shout. In our Monday evening discussion group, one time I sent people home to spend a week and go out someplace where you wouldn't have anybody calling the police on you and practice that kind of shout where you just completely from the gut. And let me tell you, you don't know what it will sound like until you do it. I highly recommend it. Because you don't know what's going to come out of you. And what Bukko did was allow her to be present to what came out of him, unedited. And then he said, "Who is this listening?" This feels so much like kindness to me. Because she'd been unable, by the ordinary means of asking people to help and, you know, doing whatever you do to try to manage your grief. And he didn't, he skipped all those steps and cut right to the chase, didn't he? And at these words, the story says, she had a flash of illumination. We don't know what that was, do we? There's something very private about it. Because that's not really describable, is it? That flash. And again, there were no sort of, or at least the story doesn't present any pleasantries. Like, oh, thank you very much. That was a great shout. You know? It's not in there. So, she went out. And she went down to the stream. Backing up a little bit, because I forgot to bring one thing in that I think is important. And he said the heart of the one who asks. We've been talking about different ways of hearing that. And the way that I'm hearing it tonight is in the sense of the source, the heart of the one. What's the heart of the matter? That kind of heart. And also, the core and the interaction. Because if we don't have to think of the heart as a thing. We can think of the heart as what's the interaction of the one who asks. What's the interaction of asking? What's the interaction of your grief? What's the heart of the problem? That's where he's joining her, isn't it? To investigate that. So she goes down, and in this account, it says, at the water pipe from the Hakugando. So she went down to the same stream. That's the same stream where that deer was screaming. Mm-hmm. She goes there. And she picked up a lacquered wooden bucket for flowers. There's another association here, and I don't know if it has anything to do with much, but black lacquer bucket is an insult that sort of in some of the con stories stands for somebody kind of dim-witted or refusing to wake up. And that one sort of hung with me through this anyway. She picks up the bucket. And as she was holding it full of water, so in the timing's a little different in this accounting. Do you see that? It's like just right after she goes down to this stream, and the reflection of the, and she makes her poem. The flower bucket took the stream water and held it. And the reflection of the moon through pines lodged there in purity. A little bit of different translation, huh? The flower bucket took the stream water and held it. You know, another term for somebody who's entering the way is a stream enterer. This bucket took the water and held it. And the reflection of the moon through pines lodged there in purity. The way I'm hearing this tonight is that sense of being so open, as we've said, being cracked so open already by that experience of listening and of hearing the raw expression of her heart. That scream that is both the deer and hers. That then there's a kind of homecoming in picking up that bucket, isn't there? That bucket full of everything and so beautiful, with the moon held there. I just get a sense of, ah, there's something here. There's something here. And then, again, back to kind of the connection, the relationship. And there's a little gap, again, because Bukko couldn't understand the poem in Japanese. So it was translated into Chinese for him. And he glanced at it and said, "Nun, take the Heart Sutra and go." Again, this is so touching to me, the way, in a way, this teacher honors and respects her and her place and where and her experience by not trying to fix anything. He didn't correct the poem. He doesn't say, yeah, you kind of got it, but, you know, keep working on it. You know, he gives her the heart of understanding. And he trusts her with it, which is a pretty big deal because it ain't easy, right? You know that. And after that, she had interviews with the master coming and being sent away. And we don't know, as somebody pointed out, we don't know the span of time. But we know that she's in a monastic situation. She's meditating with this. She's holding it. She's hearing it. She's probably writing it, which was one of the primary ways of practicing at that time. And she's also washing floors and doing laundry and working in the garden and pretty exhausting schedule. And those nuns were mostly serving the monks. So she's in a really structured environment where it's not a whole lot of what we would consider study. It's mostly work. And she's got the Heart Sutra. Takes some persistence, and it also takes community, right? She's in there with other women doing this together, day in, day out. Cooking, washing, Heart Sutra. This is what I kind of picture. Till in the end, the bucket broke. And at this point, we're making that kind of leap, aren't we? Because we're no longer talking about a literal bucket. Because we really, it's hard to imagine that, you know, I don't know. I don't see that as a literal bucket, as the literal bucket myself. Maybe you do. She probably was carrying flowers too and going back and forth to the stream. But the way it's said, till in the end the lacquer bucket broke and she presented another poem of this realization, is the way it's said in this book. I think that wording was what made me think we're already talking about a bigger bucket. The bottom, and here's the poem, and listen to her name. The bottom fell out of Chiono's bucket. Now it holds no water, nor does the moon lodge there. Isn't that a sweet other translation? Mm-hmm. And it's Chiono. It's not Mojako. It's not her formal Buddhist name. It's her girlhood name. It's her wifely name. Yeah? The bottom fell out of Chiono's bucket. Now it holds no water, nor does the moon lodge there. Now, in this account, there's another little thing that's different back from the introduction, which says that it gives it like a specific time and place on the evening. Oh, so maybe it was really. Maybe I'm wrong about that bucket. Maybe it was the actual bucket. Anyway, on the evening of a 15th day of August, when she was filling her lacquer flower bucket where the valley stream comes down, the bottom fell out. Seeing the water spilling, she had a flash of insight and made the poem. And then it skips. Later, he set her a classical koan, three pivot turning phrases of Oryu, never heard of him, I don't know if you guys have, and examined her minutely on it, and she was able to meet the questions. Again, she continued interviews with him for a long time. And in the end, he passed his robe and bowl to her, gave her Dharma transmission as a successor to teach. And other people had built a temple in Kyoto and asked her to become the first teacher there. It was not unusual in Zen for a teacher to be a woman. After Bukko died, a hermitage called Shomyakuan was built for her to be the temple of Bukko's grave. And she taught there until she died at the age of 76, although there's some doubt about that date. So that story, too, was very touching to me because it gives you a little bit of the sense of this. She stayed in relationship with this teacher. That was the beginning of a long relationship of study. And then a long relationship of teaching other women, a relationship that went on after she died, as we learn when the story picks up. So when we have the other poem that follows, because her story was taken up as for people to bring into the depth of their own meditation and hold there. Yeah. And the poem is translated this way: the bottom fell out of the bucket of that woman of humble birth. The pale moon of dawn is caught in the rain puddles. Again, I'm so moved by the sense of not only what her experience was, what Mujaku's experience was, but coming after, the sense of the dawning. Yeah, it's the pale moon of dawn, the dawning in all of the rain puddles. What about us? Yeah. What's dawning in all of the rain puddles everywhere? So, just a couple of other things that I want to come in there. About that grief and about the way the relationship works with something about that grief. That grief, that sense that grief is a passage. And it's grieving more than a state, right? It's an activity as well. And the state part of it is being gravid, right? Some of you who read Joan's article will recognize that she talked about grief having a common root. If a woman is gravid, she's pregnant. And that sense of being heavy with it, it's sort of lively for me right now because my daughter sends me pictures of her big belly. She's heavy with it. And I'm aware of what a complex thing that is. Because at the same time, you can't help also that you're grieving your girlhood in a way. And I've forgotten that part. Some of you may remember it who've been through that, but there's that sense of, I don't know what I'm going to be. I don't know who she's going to be. This one's a little girl. And I don't even know what I was, but it's going. Some part of it. And so there's this mixture in there. And then on the other hand, with grieving, what is my grieving asking of me? What is trying to be born in me? Why won't it let me go? Why is it still in there? Its lease is up, you know? and when we say, I can't bear it, you know, and we say that we bear a child, to me there's, there's a connection there that is real. In some way, and mysterious. And so, if Zen is absorption, yeah, jhana, then there is so much in this story of the way that Bukko encourages Mujaku's absorption. Doesn't say, here's the way out of your grief, but encourages her to go all the way into the mystery. What am I carrying? What am I bearing? What is this? And who is bearing it? What am I, the bearer? Where does it come from, and where do I come from, and where are we going? The big questions. Dark enigma. How is it gestating me? The me that comes forth moment by moment, abiding nowhere. So the source of this stream goes all the way back to Black Tara, doesn't it? I think that Bukko was encouraging her in giving her the Heart Sutra, which is a sutra about what? Suffering and relief from suffering. To go all the way upstream to the source, the heart. And then we discover, as we've been saying here, that you are the source of anything that could be called or experienced as Zen. It's your jhana. It's your absorption. It's your, I don't know who I am. I don't know what's happening to me. But here I am coming forth, like it or not. It has so much that, you know, ready or not, here I am, quality. Our practice. And our cons are so much the practice of that, right? Ready or not. And that's one of the powers of working with a teacher, is that when you have a meeting with the teacher, there is always that ready or not, here we are, quality to it, which is exactly where our jhana, our absorption, takes us. Just go ahead and come forth. It's okay. Someone's with you. And the branching streams that flow from that dark flow all the way through her stream and through our stream. What are we bearing? Many of you in this retreat have talked about it being possible to let yourself be in the presence of your own hearts, because we are here doing it together. Fortunately, we're here to do it. So, that was a little bit long, but there's a little bit of time for some conversation. So, speak up if you like.
Sarah, one of the things that I found that struck me as you were going through this is going through again of the pale moon of dawn, and so that's where the dark meets the light, and not spending all of your time. And she's been, I'm conflagrating. I'm joining the two women together. You know, she's met the dark, and you know, and her grief is still there, but seen in a new light. and then you brought in meditation, and to me, one way to look at that is also, you know, meditation is an invitation for the dark, and then there's the rest of our life where we carry our meditation with us. A moment doesn't go by almost where, you know, I can feel my breath, or I'm sure it's a lot of moments go by. But and I more often bring my meditation into the rest of the life that's with us. And that seems to be very similar, as far as the joining of the dark and the light. And we have afternoon readings that talk about don't just get stuck in the dark and don't get stuck in the light. And so if you can't be stuck in one or the other, that means that they're folded together.
Absolutely. I came across this wonderful little poem, or statement. Let's see, is it a poem or statement?
Is that a real poem or did you make it up?
Apparently it's from Paul Valéry, French poet. He said, God invented everything out of nothing, but the nothing shines through.
Sarah, I feel like you're saying something kind of radical, which is that we tend to think that we have to rely on ourselves for suffering. And I think what you're saying, you're pointing to the relationship between Mujaku, Chiono,
yeah.
Maybe we could call her, and Buko.
Yeah.
And saying that what happened really there was something quite different in that she was able to meet Buko, and that the suffering was no longer contained in her heart mind. That something happened in the alchemy of that relationship that was crucial.
Yeah.
So I'm wondering if you could say just anything about what that is.
Yeah, a couple of things. I think what it is somewhat mysterious. And and that's one reason we trust it. There was something about the way that he joined her in it, and respected also that only she could do, could come forth from that place. It felt like that combination. And I think it's something that you, many of you have spoken about being here, that it's that you can sit in your own seat and feel deeply accompanied because nobody's doing anything about you. I think there's that. I also have recently been I read a piece about resilience that probably Meredith posted that was really striking to me because a whole lot of research, of course, has been going on about resilience. And the outcome of the research seems to be that resilience does not have to do with what you have or don't have.
Right.
It has to do with the resources that are available to you. And when resources are enough and appropriate...
Meaning people,
exactly. Yeah. Then people are resilient. So resilience is about relationship. Mm-hmm. It's not about are you a person who has the right stuff or not? Mm-hmm. Or had the right childhood or not? Mm-hmm. And anybody read Hillbilly Elegy?
Yeah. Yeah.
That author makes the same point, right? At the end of the book he says the ones who made it are the ones who were met by someone who could offer the kind of support they needed. And those people made it. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that what you're thinking? And that, and then, surprise, surprise, that's true for us also.
Is there anything, I mean, so we have resources because we have Sangha and the way, but when we encounter suffering and grief among people either that we love or just people that we encounter, because we do all the time, is there anything that we can offer that's maybe, you know, unique or a little bit different than what would usually be given to them or offered to them? I mean, and you've got a friend. You just mentioned somebody. I don't know whether that person has a practice or not, but
yeah, it seems like. Well, what I can offer him, I'm not doing this week actually, is to take him for walks.
That's a lot.
That's what I can do, and give him a have something broken that he can fix.
That's not hard.
I mean, it's very concrete, but that's what I could do for Bill. And you, I think your answer was in your question, because you said, "What can I offer that is just what I can offer, and not you know some sort of generalized response." And that's the abiding nowhere. The heart mind comes forth. You just go, gosh, what can I do? And then you do it. that's all I know.
So kind of related to both what Megan asked and what Doug asked, could you say something about accompanying without trying to fix anything or without offering too much? Because that's part of what you talked about. And also it seems to me that the part of the accompanying allows her, it's sort of a silly way to say it, but gives her a chance to go find the bucket and the moonlight. You know, so it wouldn't work without Gucco, and it wouldn't work without the spaciousness, and in some way that accompanying without interfering gives her the space exactly to see the moon and the bucket, and then for the other, you know, for the bucket to break.
I think you're right. I'm not sure there's anything more that I would add to that. I would maybe point out what you're subtracting, you know, which is that when I am so captivated by the decor of my friend's suffering, I can be very distracted, and I can also be chicken about asking a question that I'm really curious about. You know, I've discovered that it's taken me a very long time to notice what I'm really curious about in somebody's presence, to identify it and ask it, and have the guts to ask it. So questions like, what is this really like for you? You know, because that's really what you want to know, but we don't usually ask it. Yeah? I don't know if that's
good. No, that seems right. And also, you know, having the sense, when is the time to ask it, and when is the time to let them wander up and find the bucket?
Yeah.
Yeah, not fix the bucket.
But you need something to fix.
So keep breaking it.
A friend offered something that I thought was very useful, and she had been offered that by another friend, which was that if you're grieving, you don't have to grieve all the time.
Yeah.
And it was such a nice way of saying it, you know, that when you're ready to be at peace for a moment, let that person be at peace and enjoy what moment they have.
And be willing to enjoy it with them. Mm-hmm. You want to go to the movies? Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I feel that way about this day, actually, as I was, you know, down by the stream and wandering around, and I thought, it's good that we have these few days. It's so beautiful. And it's so, the oak leaves are young and shiny and healthy looking. And That is a good thing.
You know, I can talk loud.
Okay.
Reading, I think I mentioned I'm reading The Bearing Witness by Bernie Glassman, and it's changed a lot for me because he talks about having street retreats where he and whatever group is on retreat with him, they go homeless, and they go out on the streets in New York for 5 days or 6 days, and they don't take any money, they just become totally homeless, and the whole book is really about how he, it's not just about seeing what's going on, it's about being it, it's about experiencing it, and it's changed how I've seen Layman Pang even falling down next to her father in a more intense way. And in this, with Dojaku, that moment when he shouts and when the deer cries, it's really as though they're all feeling that intense grief with her. And I think in a way, his commenting on the deer, where's that deer, he directs her to the bucket. He's pointing her to the bucket. He's because she has that curiosity then to go maybe down to the stream and find it. And
So I imagine what her shout would be. Her shout of grief. It would probably hurt us to hear it. It would be so painful for her to fully just let go and fall apart with, and let the grief just utterly show itself.
Well, I think this is one reason that in many cultures people know that you have to wail together. And if you don't have somebody to wail with, you'll hire one. Literally. Yeah, because a lonely wail of grief is a hard thing. Yeah.
I'm sorry, I walked on top of Meredith.
I just wanted to make a comment that if we pay attention to the story, it takes her a long, long time.
Yeah.
What was coming up in my mind is one of those accident things right after 9/11. I was sent some people to walk with who watched on TV as their son, daughter-in-law, and only two grandchildren were incinerated in the plane that went into the Pentagon. It was 10 years of walking with them.
Yeah.
A long, long time. Such amazing, beautiful human beings. I will never, ever in my life forget going to the 9/11 memorial and tracing my hand on the names of their son and daughter-in-law and two grandchildren and reading the stories.
Well, guys, it may not be wise to bring this in, but I will anyway. Along those lines, John Stewart got very raw and real in the Senate, and they passed a bill for money for the first responders. There's power in that witness.
I'm feeling really moved. I'm so glad that you... I've been wondering all this time, what does a deer's cry sound like? Mm-hmm. You know, and thank you so much for... I'd like to hear it, but I hear it inside. And I'm just really struck that... So what Foucault did was to find something outside herself that expressed what was inside, what was going on inside. That's exactly how the Coens work in me. Yeah. that here's something that I think is outside of me, and then I find out, oh, there is no inside and outside. It's here and it's here. And then she could go out and find her own bucket and her own expression of that very same thing.
Yes.
Oh, I'm carrying this. I'm carrying this. Here's the bucket. I'm carrying it.
Yeah.
And then it can fall out.
Yeah. 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 Huh. Yeah. Absolutely. And her water's broke.
You said that it's kind of like we give birth to the grief, but it kind of feels like to me like the grief gives birth to us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
I would throw in this piece of the grief gives birth to us. The clan I was talking about, the mother of the son and daughter-in-law, she went to Denver General Hospital. She knitted and crocheted baby blankets and little hats for the babies at Denver General, who most of those families didn't have anything.
Yeah.
And it gave her such a powerful sense that she could take her profound loss and go and offer something to these babies who would not have near as much as her children had had.
It's the big heart.
Mm-hmm. Oh, this woman had a heart you would not believe. Unbelievable human being.
And that is where it's a different kind of meaning of grieving together. It's what transformation happens, as you say. What does it give birth to?
Yes.
Yeah. That's big. Yeah. Well, is that anybody have a last thing they'd like to bring in? We do.
Can you say anything about Black Tara?
I don't know very much about Black Tara, but you know that we used to, in our invocations, start with Black Tara,
yes.
and we don't anymore, and BZI doesn't anymore.
Some of us do.
Ah, you do. And occasionally, I guess I have to confess that occasionally I do, because I can't help it. My sense of the connection here for me was actually that if Black Tara right now feels to me like an expression of what we find if we go all the way into the heart of the one who asks. How far back are we willing to go? You know, how far upstream? Because I think we, I guess this is something I feel real strongly about, actually, so it's a good thing you asked. And why I brought in Dark Enigma also, and the heart sutra. I didn't spend time on it, but you know, when she was spending time with the Heart Sutra, which is goes from how do we relieve suffering to this is the womb of Buddha action, right? And then we're not stopping at the gift shop, you know? We're going all the way in. And we can do that at any time. You know, is to say, I'm all in. I'm going to ask the questions I never get a chance to ask. Like, what is this anyway? You know, what am I? And so when the bucket breaks, to me, in a way, that's a Black Tara moment, because it's the, oh, I thought this was a bucket. It's just some stuff on the ground now. Meanwhile, here's this gush of water and all of this light and all of this stuff that has no name at this moment, right? And so the root and the seeds of that and its whole beginningless start and its whole endless end are all present at the same time. That's what Black Tara calls up for me.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Anything you'd say about that?
No. Beautiful, perfect, and complete.
Well then, I better quit the ball. Thank you.